Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My distinct pleasure to present America's highest award for popular music on behalf of a grateful nation, grateful that a young Englishman shared his dreams with us, Sir Paul McCartney.
So you're on a revolution, well, you know, we all want to change.
Yeah, just what the world needs right now is a song fest by a granny lookalike, a throwback to the drug-infested 60s. You know, there was a famous story of Nero fiddling while Rome burned. Yesterday on the Savage Nation, I read from Hans Christian Andersen's The King, The Emperor Has No Clothes. Excuse me, but it begs the question, doesn't it? Nero fiddled while Rome burned. And what while the oil burned? I mean, what is wrong with you people? You don't see the man's disconnect from reality? This is what he should be doing now, is listening to Paul McCartney? Well, let me tell you something. I disagree with you if you think this is an appropriate reaction from the president while we're going through America's greatest ecological disaster. Pardon me. I'm a little old-fashioned. But, you know, nature is a phenomenon that is very easily damaged and very difficult to repair. And I know an awful lot about nature, a lot more than you liberals do who never go out into nature. You talk about it like Barbara Boxer. When was the last time she climbed a mountain or sailed on a boat? Oh, but she's out there talking about the environment. Anyway, look, I'm going to tell you something. The world is a crazy place. This weekend, something odd happened. It was Monday, May 31st, 2010. I want anyone listening to this show who's an astronomy buff or into images of the sun. I've never seen anything like this in all of my decades on Earth. I'm sitting on the back of my boat in San Francisco. It was Monday, May 31st, 2010, at 2:13 p.m. Pacific time. A monster halo appeared around the sun, and I thought that I was imagining it. And it got larger. It was an amazing, either it was a halo or a corolla, I don't know what it was. And I said to the individual I was with that if I were a primitive, I'd be making a blood sacrifice to the sun god. Because I had never seen anything like this in my entire life. So I was wondering, what did I witness? Was it a sun halo? Was it a corolla? I didn't know what it was. So I figured I'd put it on the radio show today if there's somebody out there who could help me with it. Remember, Monday, May 31st, 2010 at 2:13 p.m. What did I see? And I'm going to ask you news junkies something. Did something happen on May 31st? 2010, around 5 o'clock East Coast time? Or somewhere in Europe, did something happen at that time? When was the Israeli boat with the Palestinian, the terrorist thing? When did that happen, exact time-wise? When did that bungled job happen? Does anyone know the exact time of that? Because something happened and God was involved. I saw it with my own eyes. I'm a man, you know, very scientific and all of that. But there's a part of me that's extremely primitive. There's a part of me that hasn't yet evolved. Let me show you today. 4:30 in the morning, I'm sleeping soundly, and I start inhaling skunk again. I have this constant problem. A few years ago, if you listened to the show, remember, I had a skunk problem, and many of you told me what to do, antifreeze, this and that. I didn't want to, you know, have the skunk die a horrible death, because even skunks have children. I figured, all right. So I got a skunk trapper years ago, and he got rid of him. Never hurt, never bothered again. Now the skunk's back. It's plaguing me, driving me insane. So they caught a skunk the other day across the street with a trap. Now the son of a, his wife is back, or son or daughter, and he sprays me at 5:30. I almost choked to death. I got so angry I didn't know what to do because I don't know where the skunk is. So I had a choice. I could have stayed there with my heart pounding with the windows closed. Instead, I got dressed and I drove into San Francisco. I told you I stay in different places at night, sometimes in the city, sometimes in a county across the bay. I come into the city at 5:30 in the morning, and I figured, all right, it's better driving on an empty road and just cool down, breathe the air, blah, blah, blah. And it was nice. There was no traffic. It was beautiful, actually, seeing the fog blowing in over the Sausalito. It was gorgeous. Early in the morning is a pleasure, and I always think something happens to me for a reason. Always for a reason. I can't say what the reason was yet. Anyway, I come in, and I want breakfast. So I said, well, you have a choice now. You have an excuse to poison yourself by going to one of the local downtown hotels, and you can eat the buffet. And you know what you're going to wind up doing. You're going to eat the greasy potatoes. You're going to eat the ham. You're going to eat 10 eggs. And then you're going to be guilty for the rest of the month that you poisoned your arteries, so you can't do that. So everything I wanted to do, I couldn't do. So I said, all right, I'll do it. I eat my normal Spartan diet. I go down to Safeway. And I buy a couple of bagels, and I buy cans of tuna. Yes, I made my own tuna. And then I come back upstairs, and I make my normal Spartan breakfast. Tuna fish on a bagel with a tomato on it. All right, it was fine. It filled the stomach, and I didn't get poisoned. I got my omegas and this and that. I don't know what happened to me, but I turned over the Safeway bill. I never do this. I swear to God, I'm not cheap. And I look at the back. They have ads on the back of these little tags from the supermarket. And this caught my eye. It was the name of a Chinese restaurant. Now, I'm a guy fixed in my own habits. I am fixed in my habits. I don't really only go to new, I don't go to new restaurants. I go to the same old Chinese restaurant I know for 30 years. It's the one that glues my lips together after I eat in there, but I do it so seldom it doesn't matter. I go to the same Italian restaurants because I know the owners. So this one says, I'm not going to give you the name. It says, XY Restaurant in Chinatown, authentically spicy, master chef cooked for multiple Chinese leaders. So that caught my attention. Master chef cooked for multiple Chinese leaders. It said, come and experience the heat, 10% off. No, I'm not at the point where I actually gave them the coupon. I didn't want the 10% off. Because I know one thing about the Chinese restaurants. If I had walked in like Mr. Yold, Mr. American Moron, and I said, here's a coupon, I can guarantee you, if I gave them the 10% off in advance, I can guarantee you what would have been in there wouldn't have been fresh fish. Let's put it to you that way. Anyway, I go in, so I say, well, what's your cuisine? He says, Szechuan. The girl says, Szechuan. Now, normally I eat Hunan, or I eat a similar kind of food, you know, Shanghainese Chinese. So this is Szechuan. So I said, well, what? It was all nice Chinese people, mainly Americanized people from America who are of Chinese ancestry because they were speaking perfectly fine English. In fact, speaking better English than me. And I said, all right, give me the food that's exactly from your cuisine. I was going to order. I should have ordered what I wanted, but I didn't. I said, I want you to give me what's authentic to your cuisine. So she says, spicy or not spicy? I said, medium. So she brings out food, fish and whatever, in sizzling oil. It was all oil and all hot spices like I've never seen in my life. But I was like in a whacked out weirdo mood. I never would have eaten it in my regular right mind. I decide to try. It's like a soup bowl full of chili sauce with some fish in it. And I start to eat it, and I accidentally ate a whole pepper. I don't have to tell you what happened after that. Nothing, actually. I amble back to my apartment before the radio show, and I said, thank God that the radio station has a certain facility not too far from the microphone. And here I sit, from the skunk to Safeway to the tuna, to the Szechuan Chinese food, to Paul McCartney, to Barack Obama, to Nero fiddling while Rome burned, asking you a question. What did I see on Monday, May 31st, 2010, at 2:13 p.m. Pacific Standard Time? What was it that I saw? I want to know, because I'm telling you, you got to understand, yes, I'm a trained scientist. Yes, there's also a part of me that's deeply spiritual. And yes, there's a part of me that's deeply, almost primitive. And I believe in omens. I believe in fate, and I believe in omens. What did I see on that Sunday? I'm opening it up to the callers. Now, look, you know I could do the politics of the day. You know I can do that, and I probably will do that. But when a thing like this happens, and I forgot to talk about it until today, but somehow the hot sauce in my stomach is like a mini sun burning away at my gut, I figured I would think about it. It started, what did I see? What did I actually see? Was it a halo? Was it a Corolla? What happened on Earth Monday, May 31st, 2010, 5 p.m. Pacific time? What time was that in the Middle East, by the way? That would have been June 1st at approximately 2 in the morning, wouldn't it? Am I correct? Was that not within the exact time that the Israelis were boarding the terror ship? I'm asking a question. Beowulf, did this not happen in the Middle East on Tuesday morning? Look it up right now. I'm telling you, I think I just put two and two together. God was talking to me. I don't know anyone else who saw it. Is anyone listening to this show living in the San Francisco Bay Area? Did you see what I saw? Don't call me and tell me you did if you didn't. I'm trying to get to a point here. I actually believe God spoke to some people with that event. You see, you can laugh at me all you want. I really don't care. It doesn't matter to me. This is extremely interesting to me. This is how I get through life. And if you think that your way of getting through life is better, you're right. For you, it is. But for me, this is my way of getting through life. A mixture of science, a mixture of primitiveness, a mixture of religion, a mixture of religion, a mixture of mysticism, a mixture. That's life, my friends. So if you think that I saw this and you saw it, I'd like to know what you saw. Let's start in Sacramento, California. Wade, did you see this event on Sunday? What was it?
Yes, actually. At work when I saw it.
You did see it. You were at work at approximately 2 o'clock on Monday?
Yes.
And what did you think you were looking at?
Back when I was in the Navy, that was explained to me as basically not to go out to sea. You got storms coming up. And it's old folklore, like the pig and the chicken on the ankle tattoo.
Well, it's a relationship between moisture in the atmosphere that we are looking at the sun through this moisture that is refracting at us. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I think it's really high ice caused by really high dew point and low pressure.
Okay, high ice. Very interesting. Is there a pilot listening to this show or a military pilot listening to this show who has been trained in looking at astrological formations or astronomical formations in this case? I would say astronomical, or I would say something that occurred within our atmosphere. I don't know what you would call that. What actually happened on that day? I'd like to know what happened politically. Beowulf, have you found the date of that occurrence in Israel in the sea off in the Mediterranean? Has anyone discovered when that was? I said, bang, does that match? What do you mean? Oh, it was early Monday morning, not early Tuesday morning. Because Israel's 6 hour, 8 hour, six, wait, the 3, 6, 9 is 9 hours ahead of us. So it happened it had happened already that morning. All right, so we put an X through that. All right, so maybe Obama's dog had an accident in the White House at that time. I don't really know. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right.
Here comes the judge. Remember that show, Here Come the Judge? I love that show. That was funny. Well, play Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles for a number of reasons, which if you listen to the beginning, you know why. I'm not going to review it every time I come back on the air, but the thing is, I saw this amazing corona around the sun, a sun halo on Sunday, Monday, May 31st, and you know, it's important for me to go into this a little more detail. Aside from not knowing exactly why it occurred and thinking it was in some way coincidental with some major news event somewhere on the planet that I don't know about, it's certainly possible. If I were a primitive, so help me God, and remember, here's a highly educated modern man, right? You look at a thing like that, it's a natural phenomenon that's just overwhelmingly awesome. You start to say, if you were a primitive and you had no understanding of natural phenomenon from a scientific point of view, you'd get on your hands and knees, you'd probably sacrifice a live animal. If you were into blood sacrifice, which most religions were into at some point, you'd start killing the flock. You'd either kill a chicken or, some poor animal. You'd cut its throat and you'd offer like blood to the gods in order to like protect you. So you understand the primitive mind, how it worked, don't you? Now, I'm not going to make a burlesque point and say that's how liberals are, but it's a pretty easy point to make. You don't have to go into the burlesque to understand that most liberals don't think, they feel. And if they feel something, they must think it's real. They think it's real. That's the problem we're having right now. We have a president who knows how to exploit the feelings of millions of fools. So although they know he's incapable of the job, they feel he's still capable of the job, and that's all that matters. You see? But let's get back to this thing I saw. What did I see? Why did I see it? What exactly happened? New York City, WOR. Tom, what is it that you think I saw?
Called you a modern day. You do God's work here on earth on the airways daily. I believe it was a halo and a special gift to you to continue in God's divine graces to be a bold force for goodness in the world. That's what I think it was, Michael.
Wow, that's beautiful. Of course, I'm not the only one who saw it, Tom. If I was the only one who saw it, there'd be two conclusions. One, God was speaking to me, or B, the men with the butterfly nets wouldn't be too far away.
Yeah, but an environmentalist that sees it will just go on an environmental tirade and won't make the proper connection that you'll make, Michael. That's
exactly, exactly right. In other words, I can find a scientific explanation for that vision, or I can find a spiritual explanation for that vision, can't I?
That's right, Michael, and you'll draw the correct conclusion that it's God first and then man.
Well, that's right. It was God first, and then the explanation second.
God bless you,
but
Michael.
But God was making some kind of point to whoever looked at it. Well, here's the point. Here's another point, Tom and everyone else listening to the show. Here's the point. How many people look up at the sun anymore, or look in the stars, or look in the heavens anymore? You know, I know someone who runs a company with a lot of young people who work for it. And she said to me, most young people never look up from their Blackberries or their handheld devices. They never look up. Their heads are always bowed down, looking down in their palm, as though this oracle in their hand, this electronic oracle, is the solution to all of the world's wants. They never even look in front of them or to the side. Have you ever seen them crossing streets now? They don't even look at cars. They're looking at their handheld device, and they figure that all will be well. What world are these children living in? And I say, myself, how many people actually look up at the stars? I mean, what will it take for them to know what's going on around them? They don't even know that there's a war going on around them, that Islamo-fascists want to destroy their way of life and steal their freedom and put them into a box from the 1400s, if not the 9th century. There are Islamo-fascists that want to drag these children back 1,000 years and imprison them. There are Marxists and communists in their government who are imprisoning them, precisely with their little Twitter device.
Savage.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do.
We're going back to a little. I love Chuck Berry's music. Great history to this song if you're a rock and roll fanatic. I mean, I'm playing it because Paul McCartney basically ripped off Chuck Berry and the other black musicians who created rock and roll. That's all. How come they're not in the White House? This is odd. I mean, white presidents have... This is like a reverse affirmative action having Paul McCartney there, isn't it? There's something odd about it. I don't know, whatever. I can't figure it out, but there's something bizarre going on. All I know is that we've got the worst ecological disaster in history, and Obama's sitting there listening to an English minstrel whose time was 50 years ago or 40 years ago. And, you know, you don't see the parallel of a Nero fiddle while Rome burns? I'm sorry for you. While the Gulf churned, okay? Does that work for you? What the heck is going on here? Am I the only one who sees this? Am I the only one who sees the corona around the sun? You look around, no one's looking at it. They're walking around with their hands in a barbecue pit. Either their eye was on the Frankfurter or their eye was on the Blackberry. But no one looks at the stars. No one looks at the heavens. Nobody. Except, let's say, professionals. Well, you know, when I was young, people would look into telescopes to see the stars. No one cares about it anymore. They assume everything is in the computer. The computer's amazing. I mean, what's in there? But to me, it's not the same. Let's say you're going to look at art, European, great European art, right? You can see it on the internet without even buying the book. But what about going and seeing David, the statue of David, which I believe is in Florence, correct? What would that, how would it be different to look at the statue of David as opposed to looking at a picture of the statue of David? I mean, it's the same thing as, and I don't mean to get crude here, it's the same thing as having a human relationship on a sexual level and looking at it on the computer, isn't it? So it's this detachment from reality. It's almost pornographic in essence. The detachment is almost, first of all, the detachment is epidemic, that we know. But then the detachment is on the verge of pornographic in that sense, is what I'm saying. the real art object as opposed to the digital art object. And then you translate that down on a human level, the real politician as opposed to the PR image of the politician. The real war as opposed to the news image of the war. What Israel actually did and why they had to do it as opposed to what the vermin in the media said happened. Okay? Et cetera and so forth, and there we are. So everything is controlled and shaped by a few minds. A few minds. Now, I don't know if you want me to continue on this track of the heavens and the celestial bodies and what I saw. I don't think it's that phenomenal. It was a phenomenon, but I don't think it's something that should supersede everything else in my life. However, I will tell you a secret about talk radio, and there's nothing to be lost in me saying this, whether you're a youngster in the field, a newcomer, or an oldster. You know what I'm saying is true. I learned something when I began in talk radio 16 some odd years ago. If the host is excited by a topic and can translate that excitement to the audience will be there for them. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, my audience is an established phenomenon at this point. This is the third largest radio show in America. There's Rush, there's Hannity, and Hannity's there only because of Rush. Let's be clear. He was a fill-in, and he's not very good on the radio. He's decent on television, but he's nothing on the radio. Rush is very good on the radio. And my show is the third largest in the country, 8 to 10 million listeners a week, right? It's an established audience, and you tune in, you don't tune in, you tune in, you tune out. So in other words, you know I can do the politics, and you know where I'm coming from politically. You know what to expect there. But I feel that when events occur in my life that are of interest or are humorous, I feel I share it with you, right? And I think that you can then see the ramifications into the political from my daily life, whether it's joking about the Szechuan food and eating a peppercorn and hot peppers and all of that. It just taught me at a certain point, don't change Chinese restaurants, you know, in midship, so to speak. I learned my lesson. I'd rather go back to the grease job I know rather than the grease job I don't know. No, I actually may go back to the Szechuan restaurant since he cooked for me. I couldn't believe this ad. This guy belongs in radio. He says, Master Chef cooked for multiple Chinese leaders. I couldn't believe. I mean, so as I'm eating it, to show you how childish I can be sometimes, I'm eating this horrendous, oily red broth with too many red peppers in it with the fish. And I'm saying, well, you know, it's not your taste, but I can hear my mother talking to me through my head. Try it anyway. It might be good. Maybe there's something in it good for you. As I gagged it down, I didn't eat the broth. If I had ever eaten that broth, I'd be in the hospital. I would have needed a kidney transplant. But there was a reason that they cooked with such spices in China in those days. A, they had no refrigerators. B, the food, there was no preservatives. So they had to use hot spices to kill the microbes. But, you know, by and large, the food supply is vastly safer in one regard in our world and vastly inferior in another way with the pesticides in our foods and the feeds and the water that the fish grows in. So you don't know which way to turn anymore other than organic, organic, organic. I mean, I eat all organic fruits and vegetables at home, all of them, without exception. Here in California, the State Agriculture Department, or no, it's the FDA, is about to approve a pesticide that is so dangerous chemists won't even handle it. How in the world in this day and age can they approve methyl bromide for strawberries, I'd like to know, and tomatoes? I happen to love strawberries, but I will only eat organic strawberries. I remember my mother lived to 88, and she used to love strawberries. I remember noting that once. I wouldn't say that was the reason, but she loved strawberries. And strawberries are phenomenally protective food, by the way, as are raspberries. All of those berries that have the rough edges to them, if you actually analyze the health benefits of them are pretty amazing in terms of the protective qualities. But they should be organic, you know. So you want to talk about berries or celestial events, Obama fiddling while the, you know, et cetera, Obama bribing another candidate. How about Marxist and La Raza taking over the schools in L.A.? Did you hear that one? Not only do the idiots in Los Angeles vote to boycott Arizona, which will come back to bite them in the you-know-what, but the L.A. district is going to teach the children that the Arizona law is un-American. Now, by forcing this garbage down the throats of our children, they have now approached what was done in the ex-Soviet Union. The last time such blatant indoctrination of children occurred was in the Soviet Union, as I said. You may not know it, but Soviet schools conducted marches, songs, and oaths of allegiance to the Soviet leaders. They attempted to make children believe that they were involved in a world revolution, which was more important than any family ties. All classrooms in the ex-Soviet Union had Lenin's corners, which were political shrines to the founders of the Soviet state. Does that sound familiar? How about the children chanting Barack Hussein Obama? Well, this is the kind of mindless braying that the Los Angeles School District would like to hear about Arizona immigration law. Don't believe for a second that the Marxists went away in the 1980s. It's 2010. Do you know where your children are? They're in a children that's been taken over by Marxists and La Raza. That's where they are. So we can get back to halos and sun circles on May 31st, 2010 at 2:13 p.m. Pacific Standard Time that I saw. And why? What was it that I was seeing? There's a physics teacher calling from New York who says he can explain it. I got call. This is an amazing call. A bunch of calls I'm getting. Amazing calls coming in on this. Because, you know, you take one thing and you can expand it into anything. You can. Everything is everything to get into the whole hippie thing. Everything is everything, by the way. You want to really tell you the truth. That is, everything is everything. If you know anything right, if you know anything completely, then you know everything. It's connected to everything. Let's put it to that way. You don't know everything, but it's connected to everything. I don't want to start sounding like the ex-mayor of New York, who was like the kind of uncle that people used to talk about, Mayor Koch, this way. I don't know the guy, but he sounded to me like an obstreperous old guy. That, let's say he was the mayor, okay, full of himself, right? Very much like most politicians. Probably a nice guy, but let's say he went to a family dinner, and one of his nephews had a PhD from MIT in astrophysics, and the nephew started to talk to him about a phenomenon in physics. That mayor and that type, whether he was a furrier or a butcher or a mayor, would have tried to tell his nephew that he knew more about astrophysics than his PhD nephew. That's the problem with certain people. Little did he know he should have been in talk radio, but he wasn't. He was only a mayor. New York City, WOR. Jeff, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thanks. I thought I'd help you with some sort of explanation as to why you saw what you saw.
Please.
Well, when the light, it's sort of like a prism. When the light comes into the little spheres of ice or water vapor, it can bend once, and then it bends again when it leaves, but it has to hit the back of the droplet, and it does something called total internal reflection. So it's really a combination of refraction, as you said, and dispersion and total internal reflection. The dispersion comes from the fact that the different colors have different frequencies.
Wait, hold on now. I agree. Okay, I'm listening to everything you're saying. I'm sure you know what you're saying. What I saw was it wasn't a colorful circle around the sun. And by the way, it wasn't directly attached to the sun either. It was detached by a huge distance. That's what made it phenomenal to me. In other words, if it was a corona just around the sun, I would have said it looked like an eclipse, right? But it was like eons away from the sun, a gigantic concentric circle away around the sun. What was that?
It's because of the angles. It's sort of like when you take a fire hose and look at the rainbow and the droplets. The rainbow isn't in the droplets. So it's displaced. What you're seeing is just a shifting angle-wise due to the three phenomena I was discussing.
But what caused that? There was what, ice crystals in the atmosphere?
And it bends. It's just like a prism, like when you're a kid or even an adult.
Yes.
For that matter.
No, but what I'm saying, was it the sun's light passing through ice crystals? Is that what I was looking at?
Yes, and its direction has changed, and there's some angles. I have to ask you, though, something. You said that I'm wondering whether God had intended something. Do you wonder the same thing when a kid is struck by lightning? Do you say, well, it must be that God intended something?
That's interesting. Well, it's an interesting question. I don't want to go there because I remember what happened with the earthquake in Haiti, when a certain lunatic preacher, a very famous and televangelist, said that it was God's will because they worshiped the devil. Remember that?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Well, I went on the air and I lambasted him and I said, excuse me, Reverend whatever. I said, do you say the same thing about when a Christian school bus falls off a cliff in Mississippi? Or is it in somewhere in the South? A bus crashes and all the Christian children are maimed or killed? What'd you say, that was God's punishing them for something? So I don't go there, no.
I just like to look at the natural phenomenon as it is, whether there's a God or not.
Well, I do look at the natural phenomenon as it is, but I was saying there was another part of me that if I were a primitive, I'd be on all fours doing animal sacrifices, what I was saying. I didn't actually go out and kill my dog, Teddy.
Okay, good. Good. That's good.
I didn't go to the live butcher in Chinatown and get a chicken and kill it either. I mean, I'm just saying. But what if you were a primitive and you had seen such a phenomenon 10,000 years ago? What would they have thought that was?
Well, I'd hope that they'd have enough knowledge to try to create a theory to explain it.
But that's the point. They didn't have a theory. They thought God was talking to them. And what I'm getting at is, even though I'm a modern man, I can still think the way a primitive does at times. I can project my mind backwards and I can project my mind forwards. I'm not trapped in my particular spatiality and time and where I exist. I'm sure many people listening to the show can project back to years ago, count back years ago to when before they were born, and count back forward. And I know that many people do this. I've talked to people who do it. I don't know. How old are you, Jeff?
Oh, I'm in my early 60s.
So you're young. You actually sound much younger than that. Let's say you're 60, for argument's sake. So you were born, let's say, 1950, roughly, right? Jeff, yeah. Are you there?
Yes, around there.
Okay. No, for the sake of discussion, Jeff was born in 1950. Do you sometimes say, wait a minute, let's go back to 1950? Let's go back to 1970. 1970, you were a man of 40, correct, roughly? Or a man of 30, rather. You were about 30 years old if you were born in 1950, 1970, you were 30.
Right.
So you project 30 years ahead. Do you remember looking when you were in 1970 and saying, God, 30 years from now, what will the world be like? Well, here you are. Do you ever say, what will I be like in 10 years from now or 20? Do you ever look forward, Jeff?
I try to look forward, back, and sideways.
You do?
Yeah.
So when you look forward in your life, do you say there's a time that you won't be here on the earth?
Can you
see that time?
Absolutely. Great symphonists thought that, like Mahler had a fear of it. And there are all sorts of people have wondered that and drew artwork. You were talking about artwork. And artwork just is centered on things like that.
I think so. I think all great art is created by people who fear the unknown, the abyss, so to speak. And they're trying to create their mark in time through their great work, correct?
Yes. And by the way, the fact that you brought up the artwork, it's the texturing and everything. That's why looking at a picture, I have about 16 prints in my house, and it's great, but it's nothing like the texture of being right up close. When I've been to Paris and Philadelphia to see exhibits, the painting itself, you can look at the actual structure of the strokes. It's, you just can't get that out of a print, even in a...
I'm glad you said that, Jeff. It takes a certain sophistication to understand that. I remember 25 years ago, there was a Van Gogh exhibit here in San Francisco. It was rather permanent in the Palace of the Legion of Honor. And I used to go there fairly regularly. There was no glass on the paintings. There was one painting, a self-portrait of Van Gogh, shortly after he cut his ear off. Did he cut his ear off? I forget already. He cut his ear off, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, but he had a fight with Gauguin. Thing. He cut his own. Well, it was wrapped in bandages, but it was when he was going mad. Now, if you look at that painting in two dimensions in an art book, it's interesting. It's fabulous. But it's nothing compared to getting up within an inch of the painting when the concentric swirls of oil paint literally draw you into the man's psychosis in a way you can, or genius, whatever you want to, whichever way you want to put it. You could feel the madness he was involved in. You could see his perceptions were altered at the time he was painting that painting. And that's his genius, that he could do it with the three dimensions of the oil, right?
Absolutely. I saw the same exact painting, and we had a Van Gogh exhibit in the early spring just now. And it had about, I think it was about 80 special paintings and then a bunch of on-premises paintings. One of the hugest, one of the biggest exhibits they've ever had there. And I've seen the Monet and I've seen...
Well, that's the point. And I think people need to recognize the greatness of great art, the greatness of great music, and actually experience it rather than feeling it second or third degree. Try to experience it right up front. Thanks for the call. It's been interesting. But you see, I told you start talking about Szechuan Chinese food with me, you're going to wind up talking about Van Gogh. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Israel cannot permit Iran to establish a Mediterranean port a few dozen kilometers from Tel Aviv and from Jerusalem. This wasn't a love boat. This was a hate boat. These weren't pacifists. They weren't peace activists. These were violent supporters of terrorism.
And yet, very much like the Cambridge incident, Obama has come down against the cops again. Look at it that way. Israel was the cops, and these agitators, if you want to call them that, mixed in with terrorists, were trying to provoke an incident, and of course Israel bungled it as well. And what did Obama just say? He's going to say it any minute on the, of course, Larry Sellout show. Larry King, the type of personality who would have, in Hitler's time, no doubt led the children into the gas chambers to stay alive another minute, in my opinion. Larry King, went on the show with Larry King, Barack Obama, to show you what CNN has become. And he called the Israeli raid on flotilla tragic. What does that mean? And he says he wants an investigation to determine the facts. That's what he said. What's there to investigate? Remember what he did when the incident, with the incident that occurred in Cambridge, where he said the cop was wrong, and the black professor was right, even though the black professor had provoked the cop. Remember that one? And then he had to backtrack. You know, this is an administration that is backwards and upside down. It's upside down with virtually everything America believes in. It's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable. I don't know if Obama actually read the law in Arizona. He says he hasn't read it, but he knows it's unconstitutional. I don't think he actually looked at the video of the violence that came from the peace activists. Interesting, isn't that? Obama hates his own allies, bows to the Saudi king, kisses up to Chavez, admires Castro, kisses up to China, tells Putin we're going to reduce our nuclear arsenal. That's Obama for you. That's Obama for you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
My distinct pleasure to present America's highest award for popular music on behalf of a grateful nation, grateful that a young Englishman shared his dreams with us, Sir Paul McCartney.
Like a fool on the hill, sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head.
Nero fiddled while Rome burned, while the Gulf churns. Fool on the Hill. By the way, Obama failed to mention that America's highest music award is the Gershwin Award. I guess it's a little too Jewish for such an audience as he had there, especially in light of the troubles in the Middle East. It was the Gershwin Award, Mr. Obama. It wasn't just the highest music award. It was the Gershwin Award. It was not the Hussein Award for music. It was the Gershwin Award. Speaking of Gershwin, actually he's one of my favorite composers. He's done amazing things. I actually like Aaron Copland better than Gershwin. We have Aaron Copland. You know, in 1942 he did a piece called, I think, Symphony for the Bourgeois, for a Bourgeois Gentleman. Could you find that one and download it? I want the people to hear how good that one is. Aaron Copland, 1942, Symphony or something to that effect for a Bourgeois Gentleman. I think that's perfect in a time of Marxism. You know, man, that could become the theme song of the Savage Nation. Aaron Copland. Yeah, Symphony for a Bourgeois Gentleman like me. Although don't confuse me with a gentleman. When people try to control me when I was a teenager and a young man, I remember they used to do it by saying, Don't you want to be a gentleman? I would say no, not particularly. I never aspired to that role. I'll leave that to the English. Look what it got them. They lost their country. Arizona governor gets few results from meeting with Obama. White House talk jobs with Colorado Dem to forego challenge. You talk about irony. Romanoff confirms. I mean, a congressman by the name of Romanoff. It's astounding to me how history is repeating itself. The Romanoff dynasty and all that. References to the Roman. You'll all jump to Google now. Romanoff dynasty. When was McCartney last relevant? He says at the bash last night in front of the Obamas while the Gulf is churning, it's great to have a president who knows what a library is. I wonder if McCartney knows what a library is. I mean, for a high school dropout, he did very well. Fine. Wonderful musician. But let's stop already with the Bush bashing. You know, let's cut it out already. It's enough. Let's move on. Bilderbergs. It's in my new book, Bilderberg. I had to throw it in. No, it's just a whole conspiracy thing. Well, look at the news out there. Look at the news. It's horrendous. How many different bribes do you have to hear of until you finally get the picture that it's Chicago? And by the way, speaking of Chicago, where is Rahm Emanuel? Am I the only one in the media who's asking the question? Wouldn't you think that somebody in the media would be saying, wait a minute, the president's chief of staff is gone for weeks now? The bar mitzvah was over. It occurred in one night. Normally you go to work the next day after such an event. Right, let's say you're a Christian, you have a confirmation for your child. Do you stay away for a month? You have a confirmation for your child, and the next day you're back at work. He's only an Air Force ride, Air Force 3 right away. He could be on AF-2 for all I know. I know the big guy had to use AF-1 to go to Chicago to meet Farrakhan, to go to the barbecue. So he probably had AF-2. No, Hillary has AF-2. Secretary of State gets AF-2. I would think that Rahm got AF-3, unless Pelosi commandeered it for some reason. Maybe she needed a touch-up, hair lightening somewhere, and she needed AF-3. Now she could have resorted probably to a 767 that the Air Force had for a hair appointment. What an administration. It's like ancient Rome or the Romanovs themselves. Rome, Romanovs, see what I mean? That's why I was talking about skunks in the city. Instead of sex in the city, it's today skunks in the city. And that leads to the next S, which is Szechuan Chinese food, which now leads to the symphony I was talking about, which you still don't have. Do you have an Aaron Copland symphony for a bourgeois? You don't have it. It was too... I'm very spontaneous. My crew is the best. I mention music, they get it, but no one can find that. That's an obscure piece. I drive around sometimes in Wilhelm. Sometimes I drive around by myself in my Wilhelm Mercedes. I gave it a name. Each car has a name. My Mercedes I call Wilhelm. It's a big, dark blue 600S. Unbelievable car. I love the car. I don't need a driver. I know that Rush has three. That's for someone trying to show off. That other one, the big one, the $400,000 one. You know that one? He has three of those, right? The Manfred? I have the Wilhelm. He has the Manfred. You know, if they ever offered the SSK that Hitler had, my God, I guarantee you someone in talk radio would grab it. Is that ever for sale, that 1938, that big open convertible? The morning guy would definitely grab that one. Oh, yeah. He needs those lavish tools of the trade. No, I bought it because it's a great car. 0-60 in 4.5 seconds, says the sticker. That's amazing for a car that weighs 4,000 some odd pounds. It rides soft like a monster car. Soft, I like. But if you hit it in S, you switch to S by hitting a button, it's as fast as a sports car. I never wanted to drive a sports car after this. It's too good. Soft inside. I drive around. So I was listening the other day, and I heard Aaron Copland's Symphony for a Bourgeois Gentleman, 1942. It was amazing. Do we have Gershwin? Since Paul McCartney got the Gershwin Award and Obama failed to mention Gershwin because Gershwin was Jewish and because he doesn't like Israelis, he couldn't mention Gershwin. I guess the only Jews that are permitted in the White House are guys like Barney Frank, who says he's ashamed to be a Jew because of what Israel did. Well, I got news for you, Barney Frank. Most Jews are ashamed of you for being Barney Frank, by the way. You have Fanfare for the Common Man by Aaron Copland. Let's hear that on the Savage Nation. Fanfare for the Common... Don't have that either. Boom, another. I think I got to go to Miami to go swimming. Sick of Bay Area already. I think I got to go to Florida and really hate the weather, hate the humidity. So when I come back here, I'll love it. It's the modern world we live in. I hear it's 84 degrees in the waters off Miami. I better get over there before the oil hits it. Comes around the bend there. Comes to its horror. Gershwin. This is Aaron Copland, right? Too long a build-up for today's audience with Twitter and Facebook. They already would have shifted to another person. It would have been on 5 Facebook sites by now, by the time he gets through the opening. They don't have the temperament for this. You need good, honest rap music from illiterates who don't speak more than 200 words of English. That's the music of the day. That's so. That's the kind of music you need for the idiots today, the hyper-educated morons. Rap music, white boys with pants falling down underneath their buttocks. Another pimply-faced 15-year-old teen walking around with his pants hanging down under his butt. The father should slap him in the face and make him wear a belt. I never saw anything like it. How do they do this? They want to look like sissies in a jail. Don't they know what the pants without the belt symbolize? Jail wears pants that fall off his behind. Can't a father tell it to his son? Turn that off. Turn that garbage off. I don't care how many gold teeth are in the White House. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care how many diamond-studded people were at last night's celebration for Paul McCartney, junkie. Doesn't matter to me. I don't live in that world. I live in my own world. A party of one. That's what the New Yorker said. It was not bad. Stolen next by the morning guy. Army of one. You hear? From party, that'd take that too from me? What do I care? Certain point, you see, cosmically, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's why Abby Hoffman said, steal this book. He actually was right about that in a certain way. Was it matter? Well, he was an idiot. He killed himself in the end because he was a manic depressive, more on the depressive than the manic side. And once the party was over, boy, was it over. You know, there was nothing left for him. Most of them can't make a dime. Most of the 60s yippies and schmippies, you know what they became? Insurance salesmen if they were smart. Realtors if they were even smarter. And if they were really smart, they went into the stock business. Or if they were really smart, they went from being a yippie with hair with flies coming out of their beards. They bought real estate in Berkeley in the 1970s, and they wound up working for the Democrat Party USA, which morphed into the CPUSA. They don't really care. Even though they're actually working against themselves, they don't even know it anymore because their brain cells were destroyed in the 1960s from the LSD. They don't even understand that by supporting Obama, they're actually supporting their own demise. They're actually digging their own graves, putting a lime in it. They don't understand that. The richest of them who made fortunes are big supporters of Leninists. Go figure that one out. And they call for higher taxes. That's the part I love the best. Where was I when I got distracted with reality? Do you have the other Aaron Copland piece that I asked for? No, not yet. Any Copland? Any Gershwin? No, I'm going to say Gershwin, because the president left out Gershwin. That's Gershwin. It's my taxi song. My taxi song. What a mind. The guy goes to Paris in the 1920s, and he's in a Paris taxi, and he hears the horns of the taxis honking before you were allowed to smoke and honk the horn in those days, before they deballed all of the Western civilization, was deballed, so that Cain could come in and slay Abel. They were bringing in more Cains than all the Abels are going. So he comes back, he buys taxi horns in Paris. Genius, Gershwin. He brings them back to America, and he puts together, he makes them into like a xylophone with horns, and he creates a symphony called the Taxi Symphony. Now, of course, that's why Obama should have mentioned it's the Gershwin Award, but I guess anything like that's too Jewish, particularly after the raid, maybe his supporters in Saudi Arabia would have, you know, admonished him for saying it was, we've given you, Mr. McCartney, the highest award in music in America, the Gershwin Award. Would have been too Jewish. You know what I'm saying? They would have thought it was like a Jewish comedian if he would have said the word Gershwin. See, that's, again, revisionist history. What do you mean the highest award in music? It's not called a 50 Cent Award, is it? It's called the Gershwin Award in music, Mr. Obama, to be specific. We would have appreciated it. Just for historical reality. I'll be back. Savage. Where is Rahm Emanuel? It's a simple question. He is the chief of staff to the president of the United States. The president has the biggest crisis of his political life on his hands. Usually the chief of staff is there to advise, to smooth things over. Where is Rahm Emanuel? We know he went to Israel a few weeks ago for his son's bar mitzvah. We also know that there are questions swirling around the Sestak situation, which implicates Rahm Emanuel, and the press certainly would like to ask questions. And okay, so you figure he's ducking them. Now it turns out that there was another offer to another guy named Romanoff. It gets bigger, and he's not here. How could this be happening without any inquiry by the U.S. press? Hawaii, Dan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
We haven't seen Emanuel since the few photos of him touring Israel. And I'm thinking there could be a connection with the flotilla incident. He was there, and he could still be in Israel, being the chief of staff to, whoever's, the public relations nightmare that I'm sure is occurring because of the incident.
Well, some have alleged that he was actually the advisor to the Israelis on the hands-off policy that caused this embarrassment. Some said he was there to make certain that this went wrong.
Well, we certainly haven't heard from him.
In order to embarrass Israel and let Obama come in as the peacemaker. That's one suspicion. There are others. I mean, I don't want to, how are you going to ever figure this out? You know, it's pointless to speculate. Israel's screwed up. We'll go into it again 50 times a week. Irrespective of the fact that it was a provocation, Israel made one mistake after another. One, they seized the ships in international waters rather than in their own territorial waters. Two, they did not have to board the ships at all. They could have disabled the ships by blowing off the propellers and towed the ships without boarding the ships. I mean, so who advised them to board the ships in international waters, number one? Number two, why did they even board the ships? Why didn't they just blow off the propellers, as I say, and tow them in? Didn't make sense. The whole thing didn't make sense. Somebody misadvised Israel, but that they listened to them is the real question. 1-800-449-8255. Read about this and all other stories on michaelsavage.com. Or would you rather I talk about celebrities or something about children, missing children on cartons? There are whole shows about crime. I'm amazed. Why is America obsessed with crime shows? Police shows, crime shows, ugly people who are in the repo business. What is this? How is it that they have a show with the most... The people in the repo shows, in the repo business, they find the people in the repo business who would have been at Ringling Brothers in my day. I don't understand what's going on. It's like I feel like I'm from another planet. I'm like the brother from another planet right now. Remember that song, The Brother from... Remember that one? The Brother from Another Planet. Those are some very funny tunes out there in the old days. The Brother from Another Planet. I don't know. You look back, it wasn't that long ago. People were not as hateful as they are today. With all the peace and love, it's gotten more hateful. The more the government tells you to be peaceful and loving, the more people hate each other. Isn't that interesting? 1-800-449-8255. We still don't have the night. Is there someone who's into classical music who can just call the show and confirm whether I imagine this? Did Copland do a symphony in 1942, something to do with a bourgeois gentleman? We can't find it. I know I heard it on the radio while I was driving around with Wilhelm. I was in Wilhelm about a month ago, late one night coming home out of San Francisco, and I got sick of listening to talk radio. I guess I shouldn't admit that. And I turned on classical music. Why am I telling you this? You should be listening to me, not classical music. But I didn't want to hear any more radio news, nothing. I turned on classical music. Well, the dog likes it better. I found out he's calmer listening to classical music than listening to others in talk radio. He likes listening to me. If I do a replay of me, he's calm. A lot of people tell me their dog listens to my show. They love it. It calms them down. My voice is very, very seductive and soothing. You will sleep. You will all sleep well tonight. You will sleep. You will all sleep well tonight.
Savage.
We are in the Savage Nation, and what's interesting to me is that Romney has said nothing Not one idea from a man who would be president. Palin has said nothing, not one idea from a woman who would be president. Now, she won't say anything because she's afraid it'll affect the oil drilling off the coast of Alaska. Romney won't say anything because he has no ideas. Is there not one Republican who has a positive idea, by the way? Remember, I'm an independent, so don't confuse me with a Republican. So I have an idea, which I don't understand why it hasn't been tried. Isn't it common sense? Let me float the idea again. You take 1,000 naval vessels of various sizes, whatever you may need, and you connect oil booms to them, whatever they use. I don't know the proper name, that catch the slick. I understand it's coming from 4,000 feet below the surface, but at least you control the slick. Does that not work to some extent? Now, why do I say, because if you contain the slick within a large circle that you create with the naval vessels and the booms that are extended, you can then burn the oil off, couldn't you? Couldn't you burn the oil off as it surfaces? Or is that idea too good? Or is it there's not enough graft involved? Maybe there's not enough graft involved. See, if you use the Navy, you don't have to pay for it. This way, they're deciding which contractor gets the job. And then there's some kickbacks to the politicians, which is why nothing's happened. They're fighting over the spoils for the cleanup. That's another thought. I wouldn't say it's true. I wouldn't say it's not true. I'd say as an independent observer, it's possibly true that the country is crippled by corruption on both sides of the aisle. That's the whole story. I heard the news today, oh boy. So where's a solution on the oil spill from, let's say, the geniuses in the Republican Party? Not a word from Romney, not a word from Palin, not a word from one Republican that I know of. Now, there was a Republican who said a few positive things. His name is Jindal. God forbid they run him for the... God, please don't run this guy for the presidency. He's a wonderful governor. But if you want to run this guy for the presidency to lose, go ahead. Have fun. How in the world do you ever think that Jindal could be president? I'll never know. I cringed. It's like the guitar player from Fox News they said could be president. What's his... I don't even remember his name. Every day they float another potential president that can't win. But Jindal had an idea. Listen to clip 17. This is Governor Jindal going off on the Louisiana coastal spill and what the federal government has not done. Listen.
That loop current eventually is going to catch this oil.
They're terrific. Well, I have sound.
There's 24 different permits. And if we had gotten approval when we first suggested those permits, we could have built 10 miles of 6 feet high berm already if we'd gotten approval over 3 weeks ago. Instead, after a couple of weeks, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers approved 6 permits.
Why? Why is that? Why is the government dragging its heels? Why? It gets worse. Listen to clip 23.
I don't want a drop of oil on an inch of my coast, but I'd much rather fight this oil on hard land than inside my wetlands. Our CPRA experts estimate this 100 miles of barrier islands, if we had that 100 miles of boom, that sand boom, that would protect over 4,000 miles of our shoreline. We could have already built 10 miles if our plan had been approved 22 days ago on May 11th.
But it wasn't approved by Homeland Security, not approved by Interior, not approved by the White House, not approved by anybody, because they don't want to approve it. Can't you put two and two together yet? That maybe the federal government wants an ecological disaster of a almost celestial order in order to say oil bad, drilling bad, carbon fuels bad. We must all ride bicycles, and we must all now become like China was 100 years ago. Is it possible the government is dragging its heels on purpose? Just asking. Why would the federal government be doing nothing? When the governor of Louisiana, and it's interesting the language that the governor of Louisiana uses. He said, my wetlands. He's taking this very personally, while Obama is taking none of this personally. Obama has no connection to the land in America. It's a very interesting thing if you study language. Jindal really feels the devastation. He said, I'd rather fight it on hard land than in my wetlands. He feels it. Obama doesn't feel America because he's not attached to the homeland the way Jindal is. Obama's detached from the homeland, and that's becoming apparent to most observers. Obama's detached to the land called America. Obama's attached to an idea somewhere else, not to a land. He has no emotional attachment, apparently. I guess this is a product of his peripatetic childhood. Now, let's not again do the psychology of it, but he has no attachment to the land. And just listen to his detached conversation about it. There's no emotion about it. Jindal has an emotional attachment. Big Sis is more attached to Rossini than she is to the wetlands. Nancy Pelosi is more attached to ravioli than she is to the wetlands. Barney Frank is more attached to gefilte fish than he is to the wetlands. Rahm Emanuel is more attached to the Middle East than he is to the wetlands. It's like a group of detached people are running the country in the minds of millions of observers. Honestly, really, that it is. So don't say he's such a wonderful leader or a wonderful guide to this or a wonderful... He's not leading at all. People are starting to question Obama's competence. But you see, I don't question his intelligence, nor do I really question his competence. He's quite competent. If you actually look at it from the point of view of a Marxist-Leninist who has achieved the office of president, and you look at what he's doing, he's very competent. He's answering to a different authority. So to him, he'd rather sacrifice the wetlands, for example, and advance his principal cause, which is green energy, reduce any attachment to oil, any attachment to drilling, destroy the oil industry once and for all, build up the green industry because that's where his cronies have trillions of dollars awaiting to be made. So you see, you look at it that way, say maybe he's actually more competent than I think. He's eerily competent if you look at it from that perspective, don't you? Or I'm not allowed to ask the question. I'm still allowed to ask the question. It's not illegal yet. It will be illegal soon if the vermin on the left get their way. But, you know, if they think they had a fight in their hands with health care, they don't have any idea what a fight's going to be. If they ever try to control talk in order to justify seizing the guns and taking control of the people through martial law, that's another theory that's operational on the Internet. You want me to tell you that I don't read it? I would lie to you if I said that. People see the most ulterior motives in this man, the most ulterior motives in Obama. They distrust him to their core for many, many reasons. New York City, WOR George, what's your opinion on the spill? Go ahead, please.
Dr. Seb, it's nice to talk to you. Obama is personally involved. It was his idea to have the oil spill so we could have green energy, and then he could blame the oil company. And what was the other?
We don't know that, but it's certainly a glove that fits the hand, doesn't it?
No, I know. I could see between the lines. I'm from the streets, all right? I know when somebody's putting up a fraud, okay? He did that purposely so he could blame the oil company. Now
let's say we don't know that's true, then. How do you explain him dragging his heels and not bringing in the Army Corps of Engineers for a month now, over a month? He's doing nothing. He wants the spill to destroy the environment.
Correct. There's the evidence right there. He's doing nothing so we can go to this green energy and pay more money. And if I may, another thing, the senator that was running in Pennsylvania, they offered him a job. Suspect. It took Obama 2 days to answer a simple question. So what does he do? Here, between the lines again, what does he do? He has nobody in the cabinet. Who's going to cover? What does he do? He calls Bill Clinton, who's not directly attached to the government now.
That's right, because Bill Clinton can't be arrested or rather indicted for it because he's not a governmental official. That's right. Very clever.
He's like, Bill, take the blame. Take the weight for me.
Right, and Bill took it. But you see, here's an interesting question, though. You're a guy from the streets. Bill Clinton is like to see himself already as a world statesman, you know, moved away from the purple dress and all the scandals. Now he's on the world stage. Why would he tarnish his name like that? They must have had something on him.
You know, it's past the money. Like a friend of mine said, follow the money. Who's going to take the weight? Who, like, you know, if you got friends, you know, hey, I need somebody to help me out. I'm in a bad situation. Bang.
Horrible. Just horrible. You know, it is terrible. I've never seen corruption and incompetence. On one level, on the other hand, it's frightening to think that he would actually want this to happen.
You know, that's what I can't understand. Why would he want something like this only for his own power? I don't appreciate that. I'm a combat soldier in two wars, okay? I went to war for these people, everybody. you know, and I come back, and this nonsense is going on, and, you know, it's plain and simple. I don't appreciate it, and if they come to my house, I'm slamming the door in their face, they're not welcome, especially Bill Clinton and Obama, because I can't trust Bill. If I let Bill Clinton into my house, and I say, sir, would you like a glass of water? He might be wrapped up with my wife by the time I get back to the living
room. Well, only if she wears a purple dress. You know, that could be like the Queen of Diamonds in the Manchurian Candidate.
One other thing in closing, sir, please.
I got to run, my friend. I'm flat out of time. I hear you. People like to talk. They should be in talk radio. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We're frustrated. It took 2 weeks to get any response. Frustrated, they only agreed to make DP pay for one segment while they approved six. Frustrated, they said the other five wouldn't be approved because they needed to measure the effectiveness of sand boom, even though their own plan already calls for sand booming as an effective measure.
That's Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, emotional, passionate, angry that the government, the federal government's doing nothing, dragging their heels. People are saying, why is the federal government not issuing permits? Why are they not offering any help from the U.S. military or the Navy? Why? And you only have to conclude either incompetence or strategy. There's no other conclusion. Incompetence, here you have a national crisis unlike any we've ever faced, and the government does nothing. Stands in the way, in fact, of the state of Louisiana, so the government's either incompetent or strategically doing something to destroy the oil industry entirely and take it over. And then last night, to make matters worse, instead of the president showing any concern whatsoever about the Gulf, he had about the same attachment to the Gulf oil spill as he did to the soldiers by not showing up at Arlington National Cemetery on Memorial Day. And God, of course, as I said, rained them out in Chicago. That's around almost around the same time as I saw the corona around the sun. I told you about that, the corona. God spoke to those of us who saw it. Whether it was directly in time with Obama's getting rained out, who knows? But I saw God's hand. You know, I say, well, okay, you see signs. Yeah, I do. I'm not exactly looking for, you know, Jesus in a raindrop, but I saw something going on there. So he gives an award to Paul McCartney in the White House last night, Obama does, and he says, you get, play that clip, and listen how he leaves out the name Gershwin Award. Listen.
It is my distinct pleasure to present America's highest award for popular music on behalf of a grateful nation. Grateful that a young
All right, let's
young
stop
English
right there. Why did he not say the highest award for popular music, the Gershwin Award? Why did he leave out George Gershwin, who lived between 1898 and 1937, perhaps our greatest American composer and pianist? Why? Why did he leave it out? I mean, he composed for both Broadway and the classical concert hall, popular songs, jazz standards. Unbelievable to me. Could it be that he changed his name from Jacob Gershowitz to Gershwin? Is that what offended Obama? That he was too Jewish? That his father was Morris Gershowitz? And they changed the name to Gershwin? Is that why he didn't mention it? Because it doesn't match the current affairs today? I don't know the answer, but this is something to think about. I mean, it's the Gershwin Award, for God's sakes. Why leave it out? When did he die from? TB? That's amazing. Why? Gershwin had a 10-year affair with composer Kay Swift. That doesn't sound too hot to me. And frequently consulted her about his music. Oy Kay? Okay was named for her. I thought he was going to name it Oy Vey. After Gershwin died, Gershwin died intestate. What does that mean? He lost his... intestate. I'm sorry. All his property passed to his mother. He's buried in the Westchester Hills Cemetery in Hastings-on-the-Hudson. No, don't get me started now with mausoleums, please. Continues to collect significant royalties from licensing copyrights and Gershwin. The estate supported the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act. Blah, blah, blah. What did he die of, Beowulf? Does it say what he died? TB? How do you get TB? That's such a non-current disease. I mean, unless you live like somewhere in the third world. Even there, they don't get it. Wait, here it is. Oh, this is not TB. He started to report it. Oh, here we go. Everyone listening to this now will have the same. In 1937, Gershwin began to complain of blinding headaches. The minute I say that, everyone has a blinding headache. And a recurring impression that he was smelling burned rubber. I've smelled that. Doctors discovered he had developed, well, that's usually when I get a flat, discovered he had developed a type of cystic malignant brain tumor. That's awful. Let's not go into the Latin name. Although some tried to trace his disease to a blow on the head from a golf ball, the cause of this type of cancer is still unknown. This type of cancer occurs most often in males, accounts for 52% of all brain cancers, and nearly always fatal. Half the audience will run to the tomorrow with the headache and smelling rubber. People are suggestive. I'm not saying you smell rubber. I've smelled rubber. Doesn't mean I have a brain tumor. You ever go in and out of certain kind of smells in your head? It could be because there's rubber burning somewhere near you, or you could be nuts, or you could have something. I mean, Gershwin's chronic gastrointestinal, another symptom. So he had gas and the headache. Horror. Let's not go into it. Gershwin was not a notorious hypochondriac, as suggested by his biographer, Edward Jablonski. All geniuses are hypochondriacs. It doesn't mean that all hypochondriacs are genius, but every genius I've ever known was a hypochondriac, health-obsessed, and a germaphobe. Every one of them. They were dying every second. They touched their body every... Oh, there it is. They're convinced every little... Every little touch in their body is a major league problem. They almost faint if they touch themselves underneath a certain part of the body they normally don't get to. Like they're in bed and they're suffering, I don't know, too much heat. And they touch a certain portion of their body, maybe under the pectoral muscle, which they haven't touched in years because they're not allowed to even go there. But they feel a slight, and all of a sudden the next day they're calling in a sweat. The doctor, they want the CAT scans. The CAT scan will give you the tumor faster than what was there. 90% of Gershwin performed a special concert in the San Francisco Symphony. I knew it. It was in Hollywood while working on the score of The Goldwyn Follies that he collapsed. Died at age 30. Oh, he was young following surgery for the tumor. Ah, very young man. But anyway, the award was the Gershwin Award. I just wanted you to know it. I don't know why the president wouldn't say the Gershwin Award. Maybe he wants to rename it the 50 Cent Award. With him, it ought to be the 2 Cent Award. If Obama named it the highest award... news story on Drudge. Document shows Kagan's liberal opinion on social issues. I'm shocked. I mean, if they found a picture of Kagan wearing a communist hat or going to a communist child's camp in the Poconos, I wouldn't be surprised. Oh, she has liberal opinions on social issues. I'm stunned that Obama's going to appoint a liberal. I really thought he was picking a moderate. No kidding. Oh, that's just shocking. Kagan is a liberal. No kidding. I'm just shocked. No, I thought that she was a moderate. I was fooled. I was as fooled by that as Obama's handling of the Gulf affair. The Gulf affair, Gulf. Remember there used to be a company, Gulf Oil, and they renamed themselves something. Remember Gulf Oil? I like Gulf Oil. And then they got ashamed of it because they expanded. So they found the thing on her with the Kagan. She's a shoo-in because the Republicans already were bought out. They got a bridge to nowhere in Utah, so the usher already took her across the aisle. What's his name, that guy from Utah? Ooh. Obama may use executive privilege to withhold Kagan papers. Gee, that's really an open administration. This guy's a gangster! He's a criminal! Obama may use executive privilege to withhold Kagan papers, you hear? How can anyone accept that? There should be a million people in the street saying, hell no, we won't go. This has got to stop. This has got to stop, this gangsterism. This has got to stop. It's impossible to believe that he's used executive order for a Supreme Court nominee. What are they hiding about Kagan? Exclusive. Doc show Kagan's liberal opinion on social issues. I'm not shocked by that. We know that she's far too liberal to replace Justice Stevens. This is even by CBS News. She's a radical Marxist. A radical Marxist. Not married. No children. Do I have to spell it out to you? What do you think you're getting with her? What do you think you're getting with Kagan? A moderate? Are you people insane? You're going to let the gangster do this to you too? And put this on the Supreme Court?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, as we start the hour, I am recovering from a new Chinese restaurant in Chinatown, San Francisco. I made the not-so-wise choice of trying a Szechuan Chinese restaurant. I don't know, I really have an idea, but I don't know why I did it. I'm a man of habit. Let's put it to you this way. It was floating in red hot chili oil. I don't know why I ate it, and I ate a chili pepper by accident. So if there are long breaks between takes on the Savage Nation with lots of music or Muzak, you'll understand why. Also, as the show begins today on the Savage Nation, I'm looking at water temperatures around America. I know I say, why? Why? Because San Francisco water temperature is 55 degrees. It's a little too cold for me. 55 degrees in the Bay. Miami is 84 degrees on the ocean. Just in case some of you are thinking about going to Miami to go swimming. Because I'm thinking of going to Miami to go swimming in a few weeks. Not that I want to be in 90-degree temperature, but I want to be in warm water before the oil hits. And speaking of oil hitting and hot oil, I think Obama's in hot oil, frankly. That's right. Obama's in very hot oil. And, you know, there was an old saying or an old parable, Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Not too far from the truth with him. There was Paul McCartney, the old granny lookalike, the irrelevant old granny beetle, doing some song and dance for the Obamas in the White House while the oil was killing the wildlife and wrecking the ecosystem with America's greatest ecological disaster. Historically, the greatest ecological disaster. So there was Nero fiddling while Rome burned. Okay? There's Obama listening to a minstrel while the oil is killing the ecosystem and one-third of America's seafood comes from the same place. Okay? Don't tell me he's in charge. Now, there's another big story brewing, which is the bribes. Obama, it turns out, bribed another candidate. The White House admitted today that it bribed Andrew Romanoff. Romanoff, the Romanoff dynasty. A Democrat candidate for Senate in Colorado if he would drop out of a primary race against Obama's favored candidate, the incumbent Senator Michael Bennett. The human gefilte fish, Robert Gibbs, the spokesmouth for Obama, said that the White House, quote, wanted to determine if it was possible to avoid a costly battle between two supporters. This comes right after the tarnished White House admitted that Rahm Emanuel had Bill Clinton offer Pennsylvania Democrat Senate Joe Sestak, a job to protect the failed Arlen Specter. Well, what does the law say about this, all you good libs? Well, here is the law pertaining to promise of employment or other benefit for political activity from U.S. Code Section 600. You ready? You got your pencils out? Whoever directly or indirectly promises any employment to any person as consideration, favor, or reward for any political activity in connection with any general or special election to any political office or in connection with any primary election shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. I'm not a lawyer, but hello. Who do you think should be fined or imprisoned for not more than 1 year or both? But you know it won't happen. Even though Congressman Daryl Issa has called for a special prosecutor to investigate, Attorney General Eric Holder, handpicked by Obama, has said that won't be necessary. Holder said, we assure you that the Department of Justice takes very seriously allegations of criminal conduct by public officials. Ha ha, hearty har har. Jack Lee Gleason, where are you now that we need you? The Justice Department told Daryl Issa in a letter, quote, all such matters are reviewed carefully by career prosecutors and law enforcement agents, and appropriate action if warranted is taken. Yes, Mr. Holder, along the lines of your action against the Black Panthers who showed up at the polls with clubs. You didn't take any action on that, did you, Mr. Holder? So Holder is holding up America. Sestak is under a haystack, and Romanoff almost got to be a czar. Obama said he wanted to be the jobs president, but we didn't know who was going to get those jobs. It all turned out to be one big snow job. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at trn1.com today. The shameful Bonnie Frank has turned his back on his Jewish religion, saying he's ashamed to be Jewish because of the way Israel acted. Well, Bonnie, most Jews are ashamed of you for being Bonnie Frank.
Politically, you have cases where the settlements clearly are abusive to the Arabs in ways that, as a Jew, makes me ashamed that there would be Jews that would engage in that kind of victimization of a minority.
And it looks like Obama has been caught trying to bribe another Senate candidate, Andrew Romanoff, this time with a job.
He suggested three positions that might be available to me were I not to pursue a Senate race, and emailed me descriptions of those positions that day. I informed him that I was not going to change course.
And when Obama's not bribing, he's bobbing or name-dropping.
Stevie Wonder, the Jonas Brothers, Faith Hill, Emmy Lou Harris, Lang Lang, Herbie Hancock, Elvis Costello, Jack White, Corinne Bailey Ray, David Grohl, and the funny man Jerry Seinfeld. Give it up for him.
That's Obama celebrating the irrelevant granny look-alike Paul McCartney, the old Beatle, who told the media to lay off the great Obama.
To all the tremendous artists from all the genres and backgrounds who joined us tonight to pay tribute to the one and only Sir Paul McCartney, thank you so much.
Well, that's pretty upsetting. Didn't Obama say he was not going to rest until the oil spill was stopped? I guess he found some time after all. Governor Jindal of Louisiana managed to devote some time to the crisis, though.
Weeks ago, we proposed 24 different permits. And if we had gotten approval when we first suggested those permits, we could have built 10 miles of 6 feet high berm already if we had gotten approval over 3 weeks ago. Instead, after a couple of weeks, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers approved 6 permits. I don't want a drop of oil on an inch of my coast, but I'd much rather fight this oil on hard land than inside my wetlands. Our CPRA experts estimate this 100 miles of barrier islands. If we had that 100 miles of boom, that sand boom, that would protect over 4,000 miles of our shoreline. We could have already built 10 miles if our plan had been approved 22 days ago on May 11th.
I guess Obama was busy fiddling while the oil burned.
We're frustrated it took 2 weeks to get any response. Frustrated they only agreed to make BP pay for one segment while they approved 6. Frustrated they said the other 5 wouldn't be approved because they needed to measure the effectiveness of sand boom, even though their own plan already calls for sand booming as an effective measure.
Have you heard what La Raza has done in the schools of Los Angeles? I told you this week that the Los Angeles County supervisors voted to boycott Arizona for daring to protect their borders. But you may not have heard that at the same time, the Los Angeles Unified School District School Board has now mandated that all students will be taught that Arizona's new immigration law is un-American. That's right. They haven't invited teachers to debate it with their students. They haven't asked parents if this is something they want their children to learn. They've unilaterally decided they're going to force this communist garbage down the minds of our children. Can you believe this? That's even though a majority of Americans agree with Arizona's law. Force it down their minds, even though most of even liberal California agrees with the law in Arizona. This is more than liberalism. This is what La Raza does. This is what La Raza does. This is what La Raza does. The last time such blatant indoctrination of children occurred that I know of was in the Soviet Union. Soviet schools conducted marches, songs, and odes of allegiance to Soviet leadership. They made children believe that they were involved in a world revolution, which was more important than any family ties. All classrooms had Lenin's corners, which were political shrines to founder of the Soviet state. Sound familiar? Does it sound familiar? Don't believe for a minute that the Marxists went away in the 1980s. It's 2010. Do you know where your children are? They're in a classroom that's been taken over by La Raza and the White House. So here we are. That's all. It's all politics. What's the big... You expect honesty and truth? What are you watching, Superman reruns or what? I mean, where are you going to get honesty and truth? Superman reruns, and you're going to see honesty and truth in the American way. That's about it these days.
Savage.
The soldiers who landed with paintball guns, with only sidearms to defend themselves, were met with iron rods, with knives, with guns. Two of our soldiers suffered gunshot wounds, and they were forced to defend themselves. We will prevent Hamas from acquiring the means to destroy our citizens. I guarantee that.
The so-called media continues to condemn Israel for its actions against the flotilla.
The situation in Gaza is unsustainable and unacceptable. Israel's legitimate security needs must be met, just as the Palestinians' legitimate needs for sustained humanitarian assistance.
This bloody massacre by Israel on ships that were taking humanitarian aid to Gaza deserves every kind of curse.
Well, we hear story after story of Israel's actions, but we don't hear anything about the people on the ship itself. Joining us now is Stephen Emerson, whose recent article in the New York Post tells us a little different story about the fine folks who are on the flotilla. Stephen Emerson, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on.
Well, who was on those ships?
Well, first of all, the mainstream media is involved in participating in a massive cover-up, not necessarily coordinated, but definitely a constellation of politically correct interests to stop the public from learning the truth about the leaders of the flotilla.
Well, explain what you mean by that.
One leader, whose name is Hawaid Araf, was described as a peace activist on CNN, except that we have articles and tapes in which she talks about her support for Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and her support for terrorism. She actually says, "I support violence."
Hmm.
The IHH, the Turkish charity, which the New York Times described as operating in 120 countries in Haiti, was actually described by a French magistrate who was involved in the Millennium plot, that was the plot by Ahmed Rassam to blow up the Space Needle in 2000, that judge described IHH as a terrorist front involved in providing assistance to Al-Qaeda, involved in the Millennium plot, and involved in assisting Mujahideen. And Israel banned it in 2008 because it was involved with Hamas and still is. Another woman, Greta Berlin, despises Israel. She was described as a peace activist, and she told one of her colleagues that she even supports suicide bombings. So these are the leaders of the flotilla, not to mention the more than 100 Muslim Brotherhood leaders, 40 of whom who wrote their wills because they thought and believed that they wanted to come to terms with death. They were on a martyr mission.
Are you sure?
In fact, a week before the flotilla, a leader of the charity that was hosting the Turkish boat said, "We're going on a martyr mission." So this was all planned out ahead of time. The people who were involved in organizing it are hardcore, radical, anti-Semites, anti-Israeli types, and even anti-American. And it's a scandal that the New York Times and the Washington Post and others do not include this information, which is publicly available.
But why the cover-up?
The cover-up, I think, is because the reporters, look, if you look at the New York Times and the Washington Post coverage, they seem to interview the same Israeli sources who say our government's involved in a terrible thing. Those are the left-wing Israelis that are selectively picked by the reporters because the reporters know they're going to make they're going to issue quotes that's consistent with reporter views. So the reporters are very anti-Israel. They sympathize with the Hamas or the Palestinians, and rather than them openly stating it, they get others to state it.
Where is the media to point these facts out?
Well, you know what? I'm waiting. Every day I'm waiting, and yet I see the New York Times doing the same thing today in terms of, selectively omitting what the Israelis found on the ship, which were knives, with bullets, and other types of weapons, and also the fact that, again, They interviewed the same Israelis who say we've got to end the blockade of Gaza. Well, those are the left-wing Israelis that constitute 2% of the population, but they don't say that in the New York Times or the Washington Post. As far as the others, such as Ambassador Peck, who went on one of the missions, a former ambassador to the Middle East, he once made a very anti-Semitic statement that I'll be coming out with in the next few days in a major article. He has appeared at several fundraisers for a Hamas front group in the United States, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, look, the Obama administration is trying to pressure Israel to stop the blockade, which is outrageous, because if you stop the blockade, you allow weapons, massive weapons, to go in. Number two, it's a terrorist-run government. They're holding an Israeli soldier. Israel has every right to blockade until their soldier is released and until they stop firing rockets into Israel. More than 300 rockets this year alone, were fired. So the whole world is ganging up. Because I can tell you, the first time a rocket comes from Mexico, we'd be targeting that city pretty massively. So the Obama administration is pretty hypocritical here.
Stephen, once again, thanks for the info, and thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
It was good to be with you, Michael.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Supreme Court has once again made gun laws an issue on the forefront, and it is expected to rule shortly on the ban in Chicago. Joining us now is Dr. John Lott, a research scientist at the University of Maryland. John Lott, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on. I greatly appreciate it.
What does your research say about these so-called gun bans?
Guns make it easier for bad things to happen, but they also make it easier for people to protect themselves and prevent bad things from happening. And what concerns everybody is what's the net effect. Just as you can deter criminals with higher arrest rates or higher conviction rates or longer prison sentences, the fact that a would-be victim might be able to defend themselves can also make it riskier for criminals to go and commit crimes. Police, my research finds, are the most single important factor for reducing crime, but I think the police themselves understand that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's been committed. And that raises the question, what do you advise someone to do? And what you find is simply telling somebody to behave passively turns out to be pretty bad advice. If I were to distill the central point that's coming out of the new research that I have in the third edition, it's that if you could ask somebody who supports gun control any single question, it would be name one place in the world where we've tried a gun ban and murder rates have gone down. Or even ask them, name one place in the world where we've had a gun ban and murder rates have even stayed the same. Because every place that I can find crime data for that's had a gun ban has seen an increase in murder rates. We all want to try to keep guns away from criminals. But the problem that you have to deal with when you're talking about gun control laws is who's most likely to obey the law. And what you find time after time is that it's the law-abiding good citizens who obey the laws and not the criminals. And to the extent that you disarm the law-abiding victims and not the criminals, you actually make it safer for the criminals, not safer for the victims. And, as I say, Americans see this when we've had a gun ban in Washington, D.C. or Chicago. We all know how murder rates increased dramatically in both of those places and how murder rates fell in D.C. after the Supreme Court struck down D.C.'s gun ban in 2008. And in 2009, D.C.'s murder rate fell by 25 percentage points. That's more than three times the national drop in murder rates that we had that year. But what happens is when you go and point out what happened to murder rates in D.C. and Chicago, gun control proponents say, well, they're not really fair tests because since you don't have a gun ban for the whole rest of the country, criminals can go and get guns from either Virginia or Maryland or Indiana or other parts of Illinois and take them in to these places where there are gun bans.
Well, what is your response to that?
One is, you know, if they really believe that you would get these perverse effects from having gun bans, why did they push for gun bans in Washington, D.C. and Chicago to begin with? But I think even more than that, there are island nations around the world which can't blame a neighbor for higher murder rates, which have easily defendable borders. And yet, when they've gone and banned guns, you've seen increases in murder rates, often extremely dramatic, 5-, 6-, 7-fold increases in murder rates after the gun ban's gone into effect. So you look at either Ireland or the United Kingdom or Jamaica, which was just in the news last week, where you had gangs fighting police and military with guns, where you had over 50 people killed in one day of fighting. Prior to 1974, when Jamaica's gun ban went into effect, Jamaica's murder rate was regularly about 7 to 9 per 100,000 people. It more than doubled in about 5 years. And now their murder rate is about 60 per 100,000 people. Even as incredible as 50 people being killed in gang fights in one day in Kingston, Jamaica might seem, it's still going to be just a drop in the bucket for the huge murder rate that they have. I mean, by contrast, our murder rate in the United States is about 5 per 100,000 right now.
How do you think the case of McDonald versus Chicago will actually turn out in court?
Well, I think most people believe it's going to be similar to what happened in the D.C. gun ban case, where you had a very close 5-4 decision saying that it was an individual right, that if the Second Amendment means anything, protects people's ability to self-defense to any extent, it at least says you can't completely ban an entire category of guns like handguns. The Supreme Court also struck down gun lock requirements, saying that if you require people keep their guns locked, disassembled, and unloaded, they're essentially no better than paperweights in terms of letting people defend themselves. Most people think it's going to be a similar 5-4 decision in the Chicago case, where they're saying not only does the Second Amendment apply to the federal government, but now it will also apply to the states. The problem is that this is such a close 5-4 decision, and the types of people that President Obama is putting on the courts strongly disagree with this notion that there's an individual right to self-defense. When Sonia Sotomayor testified before Congress during her confirmation, she said that she didn't believe that the Supreme Court had ever recognized an individual right to self-defense. And you see similar types of statements in the writings for Elena Kagan, somebody who I knew briefly at the University of Chicago when I also taught there. And it just gives you an idea, if you're just one Supreme Court justice being replaced away from having a really radical change there in terms of whether or not people's rights to be able to self-defense are going to be protected or not.
Where do you think it goes from here?
I think people get some idea of the political pressures that are there just by having listened to Mexican President Calderon's speech to the joint session of Congress a couple weeks ago, where he spent over 4 minutes telling the American Congress that we needed to reenact the assault weapons ban, which sunset in 2004. I mean, I guess my advice to the Mexican president is not only should he read the Arizona Immigration Act before he criticizes it, but he might want to try to read the assault weapons ban before he starts talking about it, because he seemed to think that the assault weapons ban covered military-type machine guns. In fact, it doesn't. It just covered semi-automatic guns. These guns may look like AK-47s or Uzis, but the inside guts of these guns are essentially deer hunting rifles. And he made lots of false claims about how crime rates have changed the United States and Mexico since the assault weapons ban sunset in September 2004. He was claiming that murder rates have gone up in the U.S. In fact, right before the ban, they were about 5.7 per 100,000. Last year, they had fallen to about 5 per 100,000. Similarly, in Mexico, there was no immediate increase in murders. They actually fell from 2004 to 2008, only increasing a lot starting in 2009. But that's like 5 years after the ban, and it's not clear why U.S. murder rates should keep on falling. I think it's just typical of politicians to go and want to blame others for the crime problems that they have in their country rather than trying to take some blame themselves for what's going on there. But I think the particularly thing that should concern Americans was the long, over 30-second standing ovation that the Democrats in Congress gave President Calderon after he made that speech about the assault weapons ban. Right when he was making those calls for renewing it, you had the overwhelming vast majority of Democrats stand up and cheer him for calling for that. So I think, you know, beyond kind of the notion where the Obama administration stands on these things and the types of judges that they've been appointing, I think it raises real concerns that about where the direction of this debate will go once Obama has taken care of other things on his agenda. And just last week, the Obama administration came out in favor of the UN Small Arms Treaty, which it looks like would require registration and licensing of guns if it ever got enacted in order to try to allow governments around the world to monitor the flow of guns.
But what about the push for gun registration?
Well, I mean, you look at the UN Small Arms Treaty and the threat of licensing and registration. I mean, one thing that's very clear is that these policies are useless for what they're being pushed for. They don't help us stop criminals from going and getting guns, as I try to show in the third edition of More Guns, Less Crime. And it's a very simple reason. I mean, in theory, if a criminal uses a gun in a crime and leaves the gun at the crime scene, you might be able to trace the gun back to the criminal, assuming it's registered to him. But the problem is, one, criminals very rarely leave guns at the crime scene. To the extent that they do, it's either because the criminal has either been seriously wounded or killed, and therefore you're going to find him anyway. And even in the few times where the guns are left, they're not registered to the criminal. So being able to trace it back to the criminal is impossible in those cases. And yet we spend huge amounts of time in the places that do have licensing and registration. Hawaii, about a decade ago, estimated that it took about 50,000 hours worth of police time each year to do registration and licensing. That's 50,000 hours of police time that you could have used to go and deal with traditional police work, which we know works very effectively. And yet, when you're talking about registration licensing, the Honolulu police chief, in testimony to the state legislature that I was at, could not identify one single crime over the almost 50 years that they've had licensing and registration that had been solved as a result of it for the reasons I was just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, what this book, the third edition, has about 200 pages of new material. There's been a decade more of crime data that I've been able to go and study, and lots of big changes in the laws. You've had everything from the sunsetting of the federal assault weapons ban to about 10 more states that have adopted right to carry laws, to many other new types of gun laws that have been enacted, such as stand your ground type laws that make it so that people who are being threatened by criminals don't have to retreat as far as possible before using their gun defensively. And what I continue to find is that letting individuals have the chance to be able to defend themselves when the police aren't there to protect them saves lives on net. That the type of person who goes and gets a concealed handgun permit tends to be extremely law-abiding by any possible measure. You can look at Florida, for example. They've had, since October 87 to April 30th of this year, they've issued permits to about 1.8 million people. Many of those people have had their permits renewed multiple times, about twice on average. And yet, over all those almost 2 million people, you find that only about 167 have had their permits revoked for any type of firearms-related violation. That's about 1/100 of 1 percentage point. And in fact, over the last year and a half, only one more person has had his permit revoked for a firearms violation. That comes to an annual rate of about 0.00009%.
Jean Lott, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much for having me on.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, let's look at what's on MichaelSavage.com. MichaelSavage.com has so much news, I can't even give it to you. But I'll try. I will try. The stories are shocking. Okay, if you want to read the truth behind the Harmada, the Free Gazakh Flotilla, you'll find out that it was far more than a collection of innocent peace activists trying to provide humanitarian aid to Gaza. It was filled with hardcore terrorists, some from Chicago. White House political team stumbles and bumbles. One senior House Democrat has said, "How can one group of people can be so good at campaigning and so bad at politics?" Huh. Well, it's not hard to figure out. L.A. students to be taught Arizona law is un-American. There is a 50% dropout rate in some parts of the school district, and you think this is going to keep kids in school? Also, Michael Savage, how not to save the news. The FTC says it wants to save journalism by bailing out liberal newspapers. Wow. U.S. continues to press Israel on Gaza. Obama's Chicago way plunders the private sector. BP chief admits we weren't prepared for Gulf spill. Obama's plan to reinvent the U.S. news media. How? By bailing out lib papers. Blagojevich trial begins today. The corruption trial of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich is shaping up to be a political circus, promising to lay bare the underbelly of Chicago politics. Rahm Emanuel's in Israel. Obama's heading to Indonesia. Military chiefs split with Mullen on gays. Mullen. The debate over gays in the military has driven an extraordinary public wedge between the nation's highest-ranking military officer and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That means the political middle military and the real military. The real military doesn't want it. The political military, well, the politicians in the military, frankly, are the same as politicians everywhere. Also on MichaelSavage.com, women in Italy to be offered cash not to have abortions. To not have abortions. To not have abortions. If you haven't gotten it yet, get it now. Healing children naturally, only on MichaelSavage.com. What is it? What is that? Well, it's all you need to know about health and nutrition for your children. A to Z natural approaches for natural complaints. Hey, look at all the uncertainty and instability that Obama's creating. It's no wonder that the economy is shaky. Gold prices have been going through the roof, and that's why you should contact my great advertisers at Swiss America. Obama might be laying the economy low, but gold is defying that trend. Go to the best name in gold, SwissAmerica.com. Let's try to go to the West Coast if we have a West Coast caller. The furthest west we can go is Houston. Dottie, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind, Dottie?
From Southwest, Michael.
Wait, you're from Houston, Texas.
Well, originally San Antonio, but and I love it. It's my home. If someone says, "What's your home?" I think San Antonio, but there weren't any jobs at the time when we were looking for work after my husband got out of the Air Force. So we ended up.
So what is it, Dottie? What makes you call today?
Well, I called originally because of your. Your smile question you had the other day, when you were younger, you never could understand why the businessmen were smiling.
No, it was the average American man would walk around with a fixed smile on his face, and I found it hard to understand because it's not a natural face for a man. I don't mean you have to go out of your way to scowl, but the natural face of a human being is not that of a smile.
Well, mine is, but I had an Irish grandma that had a saying.
All right, so you have a little leprechaun in you. I understand that.
I have a leprechaun in me, but I wanted to tell you the reason they're smiling is it's a ruse. They're trying to pretend everything is all right.
Well, it's also the power of positive thinking, and selling people requires a friendly countenance. Look what Obama did with a smile. Look how far he got with a smile. I understand that. In salesmanship, you certainly can do better by smiling than by frowning. That isn't my point. But the presentation of self in everyday life is the issue. I found it odd that people would walk around. Let me give an example. When I was young, like 18, I remember going to Europe for the first time on a trip one summer with my friends. And what struck me when I arrived in Rome now, was how the men didn't walk around with smiles on their faces. They didn't walk around with hatred or anger. They had a boldness. They looked like lions to me walking in the street. They looked you straight in your face with a leonine look, and they evaluated you. And I said, gee, that looks more real to me than the fixed smile. You know what I'm getting at?
Yes.
In other words, when you're young, you're trying to find your own identity. And so sometimes you have to find it in books. Sometimes you have to find it in people. Other times you have to find it by travel. But the way a man presents his face in everyday life is culturally quite different, is the point. So when the Playboy interviewer said to me, why are you angry? And I was stunned by it. I said, what are you giving? Where'd you get the idea I'm angry? What did he want me to do, sit there smiling at him, you know, sucking on a mint? So I looked like a nice guy. I didn't understand the question.
He's an idiot. The other.
I wouldn't say he was an idiot. I would say that he was doing his job.
Savage.